You know that Lou Gehrig is one of the greatest players of all time. So if there's somebody that can get the job done, it's definitely Lou Gehrig. And so the count's full, the pitcher gets his signal, he gets set, and he fires a pitch. As soon as the catcher catches the ball, the umpire yells, "Strike three!" Ball game. Lou Gehrig watched the perfect pitch go right down the middle of the plate. After that, he turns and looks to the umpire and he says something to him. And at this point, the crowd goes crazy. They were already standing and cheering, but when Lou Gehrig turned and said something to the umpire, they start going crazy because Lou Gehrig never argued with the umpire. And so a buzz started around the stadium of what did he say? What did he say to that umpire? Did he argue that that wasn't a strike? What's going on? And the sports writers who were in the stadium that day began salivating over who can get this story from Lou Gehrig. Because whoever gets the story of what he said immediately has the headlines for the next morning's paper. And so all these sports reporters are trying to track down Lou Gehrig, and eventually they catch up to him and they ask him, they said, "What did you say to the umpire after he called strike three that ended the game?" And Lou Gehrig kind of laughed and turned to him and he said, "Mr. Ump, I'd give $10 to have that one back." I don't know about you, but I can identify with Lou Gehrig that there are some situations and times in my life where I would pay a lot more money than 10 bucks to have those times back and do them over again. Would you agree? Some of you adults here today, would you start shaking your heads and let me know? Yeah, I know you would, because I know I would, that I would pay every penny I had to go back and replay some times in my life where I just didn't do it the right way. It was a major mistake, and I'd pay a lot more than $10. Well, Jesus tells a story of a guy in Luke 15 who probably would try and go back and replay some situations, who was given a lot of money and actually gave up all of his money in his mistake. It's found in Luke 15, starting in verse 11. It's a story that many of us are very familiar with. It's a parable that Jesus tells that we refer to as the parable of the prodigal son. And if you're very familiar with this story, one of the temptations is just to kind of blow through the story, to not even pay attention to some of the details. And so what I want to do this morning is instead of reading, I just want to tell you the story, but I want to tell you the story from the father's perspective. Because Jesus sort of gives us the overall view of this story, and a lot of times we don't actually see what it was like to be that father and to watch this situation unplay. So in Luke 15, starting in verse 11, Jesus tells us that there's a father who has two sons. And one day they're sitting, and I'm going to add a few details to this. These details aren't mentioned in the story, and I don't think that they change any part of the story. Just want to fill in if we were to have this situation happen today, sort of what it would be like. And so maybe they're sitting there at the dinner table and they're having the casual dinner conversation until the younger son looks at his dad and he says, "Dad, I'm leaving. I'm going to go, and in fact, I want you to go ahead and give me my portion of the inheritance because I don't plan on coming back ever." Talk about awkward dinner conversation, right? And this father, in his best judgment, gives his son his portion of the inheritance. What we need to understand is he didn't just reach into his wallet, pull out his checkbook, and write him a check. His inheritance would have been tied up in their estate. It would have been tied up in livestock. And so for however long, this father goes and he starts selling off portions of the estate and selling off livestock and gets all the money together. Meanwhile, the son is packing his bags. And he sort of, maybe you've seen it in the movies, he takes the globe, he just spins it, and then wherever it stops, he just points his finger and he says, "Okay, that's where I'm going, as far from home as I can get." And so the son goes to his room and he starts packing all of his stuff, and that day finally comes. He's got money in hand, he's got his bags packed, they're standing at the door, and he says, "Well, I guess this is it. I'll see you later." And the son starts that long walk down the driveway, down the road, and out of sight. Can you imagine how the father feels? Watching his child leave, never knowing if he'd see him again. Some of you have felt that way before. Some of you have had children who maybe have left your house in a rage. Maybe they packed their bags, said they're going to run away. And you sat there and you watched. Some of you have packed your children's belongings in their car and you watched them pull out of town as they headed off to college somewhere that wasn't at home. Some of you have watched your children board a bus on their way to boot camp or board a plane on their way to be deployed for war, and you wondered, man, am I ever going to see my child again? And you rack yourself with grief and shame and regret, wondering, did I do everything I should have done? You know, what if I never get to see them again? And you sort of go through this stage of mourning almost, this stage of grief. Some of you know what that's feel like as you went through the empty nest syndrome. Some of you didn't have so much grief as you had joy, but some of you probably had some grief from the empty nest syndrome. And you watched your children leave. Man, you've never been the same ever since. That's what this father goes through. And he watches his son walk out the door. And I would venture to guess that this father probably had an idea of what path his son was going to take. Because anytime someone is driven by that much selfishness, it never turns out good, does it? And so the son leaves. Let's fill in the details. He goes, and he goes as far from home as he can get, and he gets there. He's got a lot of money, which means he's got a lot of friends. He's partying hard. He is living the life. Meanwhile, dad sits at home on the front porch, and he watches the road. And the son parties hard. He parties hard. He has a great time until all of a sudden he runs out of money, which means he runs out of friends. And about the same time, a famine hits the land. And now everybody's going through hardship. It's like the depression's hit where he's living. And so this high, crazy lifestyle that he was living, all of a sudden reality hits him, and he's got to find a job. And so he searches around. Maybe he looks on Craigslist, and he finds a job for a farmer feeding pigs. And so he goes, and he walks into the pig pen, and he throws the slop in their feeding troughs. Meanwhile, his dad sits at home, and he watches the road every day. And the son is just trying to get by, but he's not making enough to make ends meet, and he's hungry, and he's desperate, and he sits there and he looks at the pig slop. He says, man, that's starting to look pretty good. I wonder what that tastes like. Could you imagine being that hungry? I've never been that hungry. I'll go ahead and tell you. I don't know that I ever want to be that hungry. But this guy was desperate. Meanwhile, his dad sits at home and he watches the road. And it's in this pig pen that the son finally comes to himself. He remembers what it was like when he was at home. And the Bible says he comes to his senses. He has that reality check. Reality has finally caught up with him because he was living the crazy party lifestyle until he ran out of money, until he ran out of food, till he ran out of friends. And all of a sudden now he realizes where his life has actually led him. That it's not all fun and games. That he is in a bad situation. And so he begins to think to himself, why don't I just go home? But then the next thought that comes to his mind is, man, there's no way my dad would ever let me come back home. Some of you ever felt that way? Man, if my parents knew what I've done, there's no way they let me walk back through their door. That's what's going on in his mind. Meanwhile, dad sits on his porch and he watches the road, waiting for his son. And so the son says, you know what? I'll go back home. And on his way home, he practices this speech. He's had plenty of time to think about it, walking all the way back home. And he comes up with this speech. Dad, I've messed up. Man, I've messed up so bad, I'm not even worthy to be called your son. Would you just hire me so that I can work around the house? Not as a son, but as one of your servants. And so all the whole way home, he's wondering, what's it going to be like when I see my dad? When our eyes meet and he realizes that I have wasted everything he ever gave me. And he thinks about, how am I going to start that speech? Do I even call him dad? Is he even going to look at me? Is he even going to let me walk through the door? And so he's walking home. I'd imagine, I don't know because the Bible doesn't tell us, but I'd imagine he's walking with his head down, that he's going through this speech, especially the closer he gets home. His hands start to shake a little bit. He's getting really nervous. He's filled with shame and guilt. Meanwhile, his dad sits on his porch and he watches the road. Until that one day when he's watching the road, all of a sudden this figure breaks over the horizon. And it doesn't take him long to realize that's his son. Well, you know your children better than anybody, don't you? You know exactly what they look like, even in the dark. You know the cries that they make. You know the sound of their cough. You know the sound of their laugh. You know exactly who your children are. And so he sees his son break over the horizon. And he darts out of his rocking chair and he runs down the road. I wonder if the son even saw him coming, if he's just walking up the road with his head down. Or maybe he sees him coming and he thinks, oh my goodness, my dad's coming to chew me out. He wouldn't even wait for me to get to the porch. He's going to meet me before I can even get to the mailbox. You know what I mean? And so the son's walking up and the dad comes and just throws his arms around him. And the son begins his speech, Dad, I've messed up. And the father just cuts him off. He calls back to the house. He says, hey, somebody, go get the best robe you can find. Go get the family ring with the family crest on it. Go get some sandals because my son is home. He was lost and he's found. Oh, by the way, go find the fatted calf because we're having steaks tonight and we are going to celebrate. Can you hear the excitement in the father's voice? Can you hear the relief that his son is finally home? He sat there every day and watched that road. And he wondered, where's my son? What is he doing right now? Is he alive? Is he safe? Is he okay? Who's he spending his time with? Has he wasted everything? Is he in jail? What's going on? But now he doesn't have to wonder because his son's home and he's safe. And instead of reminding him of the mistakes that he's made, the father embraces him. Gives his son the biggest hug he could ever give him. Kisses him on the cheek. Says, welcome home, son. It's a different ending to a story than maybe some of us would expect. That maybe some of us would expect the father to run to him and to say, son, I told you. I told you don't leave. I told you don't blow all your money. I told you don't hang out with wrong people. But that's not what he does. He welcomes him home. He doesn't drill him over where he's been. He just embraces him. And it's an awesome story. It's by far my favorite parable that Jesus tells. And I believe it has two major applications for us today, really to two different groups, depending on where you are today. The first application is to the group of people who are still in the house. You see, the father had two sons. He did have one son that didn't leave. And it's an interesting exchange that the older brother has with his father when he finds out that his younger brother's back home. He's not so overjoyed about the baby coming back home. But I believe that the first application is for those of us that are still in the house, that we haven't walked away from God, that we are in a saved relationship with Jesus Christ, that we are growing in our faith, that there's an application for us to those of us that are in the house. And that's simply this. Do we celebrate the way that heaven does when one of God's children comes home? Dustin read a very powerful verse for us. It's repeated a couple of times in Luke 15. Jesus tells three parables in this chapter. All three have the same theme. There is more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who don't need to repent. That heaven celebrates when one of God's children comes home. I can only imagine the joy that's found in the presence of God when someone comes back and gives their life to Christ. And so my question for those of us that are in the house is, do we celebrate like that? When someone gives their life to Christ, when someone is baptized into Christ, when someone recommits their life to Jesus, do we, to those of us that are in the house, do we really celebrate like that? You see, I know we know how to celebrate. I know we know how to cheer people on. I've seen teenagers go crazy over a Justin Bieber concert, over a One Direction concert, over a movie that's coming out. They are going crazy over this kind of stuff. But it's not just teenagers, because I've seen grown men and women screaming their heads off because their college football team, especially in recent years, on both sides of the state, won national championships. Grown men and women screaming their heads off at a bunch of 18 to 22-year-olds. I know we know how to cheer. Oh, I know we know how to cheer. And not only that, but I know that we know how to welcome people home. Because I know what the way this country treats our soldiers who've been fighting overseas. I've seen when hundreds of people will line an airport and they will cheer as soldiers walk through the airport. Or when a unit's plane comes back into the military base and all of their family and friends are there and the soldiers come off the plane and everybody just gives them a standing ovation. Or maybe you've gone to a baseball game or Friday night we were at the Bay Bears game and they asked all our servicemen and women to stand and we all gave them a round of applause and thanked them. I know we know how to welcome people home. I've seen some of you welcome your children home for college. Or maybe they're older and married and have a family and you welcome those grandkids in. Oh, I've seen the joy that you have when they come into church and you haven't seen them for a while and you just throw your arms around them and embrace them. I've seen the way this church has welcomed home our mission teams. I know we know how to welcome people home and I know we know how to celebrate. The question is this, do we celebrate like that when one of God's children comes home? Are we filled with that kind of joy and excitement over a person's life being changed by the gospel of Jesus Christ? Because I can promise you this, heaven is celebrating. We've said it many times. When someone is giving their life to Christ, we've said right now there's a lot of rejoicing in the presence of God among His angels. But is there rejoicing in the presence of God's people? Are we truly excited about it? Well, I got a challenge for us today. To those of us that are in the house, to those of us that haven't walked away yet, we've got a challenge for us. That when someone walks these aisles to give their life to Christ, when someone walks down these aisles to recommit their life to the Lord, that we don't ever let them walk alone again. My challenge to us is that when someone comes forward during the invitation, that we never let them make that stroll alone. We never let them sit up here by themselves. I know the preacher's going to go sit with them. I know one of the elders is going to come. But I'm talking about those of us that are in the house, that we don't let anybody do that alone ever again. And here's the reason why. I want to ask you a question. I want to talk to those that are in the house, those that are still in a relationship with the Father. How many of you walked away from God? How many of you at one time in your life lived a lifestyle that would be considered prodigal, lived a lifestyle that would be considered reckless, that would be considered sinful? Maybe even you had come into a relationship with the Lord and then you walked away after that. You shunned your faith for a season and you left the Lord and you just lived your own lifestyle. Or maybe it was before you came into a saved relationship with God that you just lived a very worldly lifestyle. If that's you, would you just stand today? I have a reason for it. But if that's you, listen, I'm the first one standing, folks. Don't think you're the first one standing. If you've walked away from God or if you lived a reckless lifestyle, would you just stand? Man, our young people need to see you. They need to see people, adults, who have walked away from God, who have lived a reckless lifestyle. Young people, look, it's some of your parents. It's some of your grandparents. It's some of your mentors in the faith. You can be seated. Thank you. If you're here today and you're not in a relationship with God and you think, man, there's no way God would ever accept me. Did you see some of the people standing? If they could come up here and share their stories with us, some of us would probably be very surprised. We think, no, there's no way they did that. They are too good. Oh, none of us are good. We're only good because of God. And so I want those of us that just stood, remember, I'm standing with you. I wasn't sitting during that portion. I was the first one up. That those of us that were just standing just now, at some point or another, we walked the aisle, didn't we? We came and gave our life to Christ. Maybe we didn't do it at a public church service. Maybe we did it at Bible camp. Maybe we did it with some friends and family. But at some point, we started that journey back to God. Whether it was for the first time or whether it was to go back to Him because we had walked away from Him after becoming a Christian, that we've made that walk. Many of you have walked down these aisles and you've sat on these rows and you know exactly what it feels like. You know what that shame and that guilt feels like. And you know sometimes how you can feel so alone sitting up here. Let's never allow anybody else to feel that way. And so really my challenge is for those who stood to never let someone sit up here by themselves. I believe that's a challenge, an easy challenge that we can all accept. Well, I want to talk to another group of people because there may be some here who aren't in the house, who've walked away from God. Maybe you are in the pig pen today. Maybe you identify with the story of this young man. It's my favorite parable, and really it's my favorite parable because it's the one that I identify with the most. Because I know what it feels like to walk away from God. Even after becoming a Christian, I know what it feels like to live in the house and to live with God and then to say, hey, I'm gone. I'm leaving. I'm doing my own thing. I'm getting as far away as I can get. I know what that feels like. And I know what that long walk home feels like. I know what it feels like to be sitting in the mud, to be sitting in the pig pen, and to think, what am I doing here? Why did I get to this place? I know what it feels like to trade my salvation away for something that was worthless, for something that gave me nothing in return. Many of you feel that way. And there may be some of you here today who are there right now, that you're sitting in the pig pen, you're covered in sin, you're desperate, you're hopeless, you're lost, you don't know where to go. And I know what you're thinking, there's no way God will accept me back. There's no way I could ever go back to God. Not with the places I've been, not with the things I've done, not with the people I've been with. If that's you today, I want to point out a detail in the story that I overlooked a lot. And to me, it may be the most profound part of this story, at least to me. That when the son is walking home, and the father sees him break over the horizon, and the father jumps up and he sprints to him. That when the father runs up to him, what does he do? He throws his arms around him and he embraces him and he gives him a kiss. Where had the son just come from? The pig pen. What does he smell like? The pig pen. What is he covered in? Mud and slop and nastiness and filthiness. And the father doesn't run up to him and say, son, good to see you, son. Okay, let's go get a bath. Let's clean you up and then we'll do the whole hug thing because I love you. I just don't want to get nasty like you. You know, I love you. I just don't want to smell that. You know, that's pretty awful. That's not what he does. He runs up to him and he throws his arms around him. And he doesn't even care that the son is covered in mud because the father understands something that sometimes we forget. And here's the application for those that may find themselves in the pig pen. That God doesn't say, clean yourself up before you come to me. Because a lot of us think that. A lot of us think, man, I have to drop these bad habits before I can become a Christian. I have to do away with all this stuff before I can give my life to Christ. That's not the message of the gospel. The Father does not say, clean yourself up and then come to me. The Father says, come to me and I will clean you up. Come home and I will wash you. That it's not come home and you can just continue to do whatever you want to do, because that's not the message of the gospel either. The message of the gospel is the love of Christ will compel you to allow God to work in your life and to clean up all of the sin that's in you. It's a process. We call it sanctification. There's an immediate forgiveness that comes when we give our life to Christ. That when a person is baptized into Jesus, that when they are lowered into the water and when they rise up, immediately their sins are washed away. But that doesn't mean we shook them, right? And so then we go through this process of overcoming our sin and of pushing them away and allowing God to work more and more in our life. That's the message that I want you to hear today. If you're in the pig pen, if you find yourself at a place far away from God, He just says, come home and we'll take care of the rest when you get here. So today, where are you? If you find yourself at a place far from God, if you're in a situation where your relationship with the Lord is not what it should be, if maybe you've walked away, you walked out of the house and you went down that road and you found yourself at a place that you shouldn't be, come home. The awesome part is that the Father, our Father, is not sitting on a porch. He's already running toward you. He's not waiting on you to get down to here before He throws His arms around you. He's running to you. Isn't that a beautiful thought? And that doesn't matter where you've been. Doesn't matter what you're struggling with. He's going to embrace you. He's going to restore you as a son or a daughter. And so in just a minute, we're going to sing an invitation song. And when we sing that song, that's an opportunity for you to commit or recommit your life to the Lord. That if you want to do so in a public way, you can walk down this aisle and you can come sit down here and we will assist you in that. If you want to be baptized into Christ, or if you want the prayers of this church, and we promise you something, that we won't let you walk alone, that we won't let you sit up here by yourself, that we're going to join you. One of the things I love most about Gulf Coast Bible Camp is that anytime someone responds to the invitation, their youth group, their cabin, all their friends, they just go sit with them. Sometimes you'll have more people sitting on the stage than you do sitting in the audience. And I think it's a beautiful testimony of the love that our young people have for one another. Many of you have seen that. Many of you have experienced that. What if that was the story of Creekwood? What if when someone came down here, that there wasn't even enough room on the front row of folks that love them, that support them, that are celebrating with them, that we're welcoming you, we're throwing our arms around you. None of us is perfect. Some of us have more bigger problems than others, but it doesn't matter because the message is the same. Just come home and we'll work on it. Come home and we'll clean it up. And God's welcoming you, and we are too. We want to celebrate with you today. And so if you need to be baptized into Christ, if you need to recommit your life to the Lord, then you can do so as we stand and sing.